Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You are listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael.
All right, buddy, welcome back to another episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by Michael.
Hello, everybody, and happy birthday to Dolly Parton. I know she's a big listener, huge fan of the show. Dolly Parton and Betty White with birthdays this week. Pretty big week for the 23 Personnel fan club.
Huge.
A lot of Dolly Parton, Betty White fans listening too. And, you know, we're glad to have you. I'm one of them. Grew up on some Mary Tyler Moore reruns on the old Nick at Night.
Wow.
Yeah. Some Golden Girls. A little bit of Jolene thrown in there, here and there.
Jolene.
Well, there he goes. There he goes.
No, I'm not going to do it. It's too much. It's too much singing as it is.
Man, I was looking forward to the rest of that.
Jolene.
So I said huge earlier and I was like, oh yeah, well, we've got the presidential inauguration tomorrow, Wednesday, January 20th.
Pretty big day. Pretty big day in the US.
Big day. Have you ever watched an inauguration?
Yes. And it must have been, it's got to be 92.
Oh, wow.
Or not, 90, well, election 92. So I guess 93. That's the one I remember watching because we were in music class. I was in elementary school. They, you know, they made us watch it. Not like, you know, they held us down and kept their eyes open or something. But that was just something that we watched. And that's the one I remember the most. I don't remember any other ones. So 93, it's got to be, that was Clinton's first term.
Yeah, he was.
So I remember that one. But I don't remember any of the other ones. I didn't watch any of the other ones that I know of.
Yeah, my boss asked me that today. He's like, are you going to watch it tomorrow? I was like, I couldn't tell you if I've ever watched a presidential inauguration before.
Yeah, that is the only one I remember.
I may do that. I don't know.
Yeah, go for it. It's history. It's historical. Do it.
Historic.
You're home. You might as well just turn on the TV.
No, I'll be in the office tomorrow. I was in the office today.
What?
I know. I have to utilize our video studio space. So shooting a video tomorrow. Good times. You know what I won't be doing tomorrow though, Michael?
Yeah. I'm
watching Texas Tech basketball.
This is true.
We will get to that, but Texas Tech had not one, but two basketball games postponed today. Wednesday night versus Iowa State. Sorry, Wednesday night versus TCU, Saturday afternoon versus Iowa State. Related to the opponents having COVID. So not Texas Tech, but the opponents.
Correct.
I'd like to point out that I'm sure like the basketball team had COVID. But guess what? They had it in the offseason. Just like I'm sure a lot of the football team dealt with COVID, like in as opportune time as possible, because I think we mentioned like something 80 or 90 of the football players and staff ended up contracting the virus, but you never missed a game.
Well, and it was pretty fortunate timing. I know that I think one of the bye weeks was,
you would have been
there were
struggling.
A lot of guys just randomly. Yeah. It seemed like there were a lot of guys randomly out that weren't, there was no real reason for them to be out. And then there was a bye week and then those guys were back. So yeah, you can kind of deduce what happened there.
Deduce. So you won't get all of the great game day content from the 23 Personnel Podcast Twitter account, but you will get some shade every now and then when I say that Texas Tech has lost a game on the, or not lost a game. They had a game postponed because somebody else couldn't control COVID on their team.
I saw you do that. I thought that was pretty bold. I thought that was kind of, you know, kind of calling your shot there. We'll see if that comes back to bite us.
Cause here's the thing, like it, I mean, we talked about a lot with football, and it was one of those things where population of Texas Tech students age are very likely to get it, especially in the circumstances that you have so many people in confined spaces like campus or athletic teams or what have you. It's very likely they're going to catch this very contagious communicable disease. So in the interest of Texas Tech fans and making sure you get through your schedule on time, you got to time your virus contraction with your off season or with your bye weeks. And Texas Tech was able to do that. TCU.
Are you implying that this was an intentional
management
decision?
No, but here's the thing. Like if hindsight
part
here,
part of the off season curriculum was,
if I was Beard, I'd be like,
let's hand out the playbook. Let's all hand out this, this same sandwich. Let's all take a bite of this same sandwich every day.
I mean, I'm just saying, if I'm Beard and I'm in like June or July, I'm looking at my schedule, is like, we've got 4 months to get ready. I'm like, don't avoid the on-campus parties, guys. Wink, wink.
Oh, that's just terrible. That's just,
yeah. But if you want to follow me for more awful takes, follow Spencer at Punts Suck, Michael at Michael_LBK. You can find us on Instagram, 23 Personnel Podcast. You can also pick up 23 Personnel Podcast merchandise. I'm wearing a t-shirt myself right now. teespring.com/store/23personnel podcast. Those links are in the show notes on Staking the Plains, where you can find all kinds of great Texas Tech content.
Yes, please visit stakingtheplains.com. Seth runs an excellent site and has been busy as all get out with basketball and wrapping up football and getting ready for baseball. Speaking of baseball, probably a good time. Yes, if you haven't already subscribed, to subscribe to, oh my gosh, how better can I fumble this ad read? It's not an ad read. We don't get paid. Dinger Derby. Subscribe to the Dinger Derby podcast. Keith does a great job.
He should.
He's getting geared up for another baseball season. I probably should have waited till we were talking about baseball to bring it up, but it just kind of made sense. So subscribe to Dinger Derby. He's everywhere. Follow him on the Twitter and get your baseball knowledge from almost the source, practically the source. He's becoming part of the program.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he's He's embedded. If you,
he's there.
He's there.
Agreed.
We'll talk about baseball. Obviously, we're going to talk about basketball. We're going to look back on your games against Texas and Baylor. We had planned to do an instant reaction Saturday afternoon, but things did not go well, and I was not in a mood. So
I could sense that.
We will go through that. I would say that we look ahead and preview TCU and Iowa State. That's not a thing. I guess we could preview West Virginia. That's still on the schedule, maybe for Monday.
Yeah, that's a ways off.
And then LSU would be the following Saturday. So you got some time off here to scout West Virginia when and if they come back. You can rest, make sure Kevin McCullough's ankle is 100%. Any other guys that are dealing with little nicks and dings are ready to go. But before we get there, you need to know that the wait is finally over. Football is in full effect. And, Michael, the NBA is back. I watched a Spurs game the other night.
The only game that I've been able to watch all year. I watched the first half of it against the Rockets.
Yeah, against the Rockets. And it was the day all the Rockets news broke about the big trade and everything. So the Rockets team they played was like depleted. Like they had sent off their pieces for trade. They had not gotten their guys back from the trade because it was like not official yet. So it was like it wasn't even like the full Rockets team. Rockets still won somehow.
Yeah, I was about to say, yet my Spurs still lost. I'm not sure how that happened.
Anyways, entertaining. It was, as somebody that doesn't watch a lot of NBA basketball, I watched this game. I was like, holy crap, the college game moves like molasses compared to the NBA.
Seriously. Okay.
It is so slow. NBA is like, boom, boom, boom. there's no motion offense. There's no trying to find a good shot. The teams come up the court. They find an open guy within seconds, or they create their own shot, and then it's next possession. So fast.
Yeah. I get that. But my brain went from watching mostly NBA basketball to mostly college basketball. And so that transition happened over the last probably 5 years. And then now when I switch on an NBA game, I feel like the games take forever. Now the play is great. Plays, like you said, they usually don't wait till 3 seconds on the shot clock to do something. It's usually like, who was it? 7 seconds or less, the Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire, the Suns. I think that was their kind of offensive philosophy where they were getting that ball to the basket in 7 seconds or less, something like that. So I got used to that pace, but there's something just the overall feel of the game. It feels so much longer having four quarters than two halves. I can watch a college basketball game and then, you know, look down at my watch or at my phone and then look back up and it's, oh my gosh, there's 2 minutes left in the first half. But an NBA game, it takes a mentally longer time to play.
And I wonder if
the game, just, I don't even know if it's true.
I wonder if it's just because they have so many more possessions.
Maybe that's all it is.
I mean, because the game is takes longer. The game is what, 8 minutes longer in game time. Anyway,
I think so.
Yeah, I watched an NBA game. I was like, man, like the speed, the pace of the game was so much faster. I was like, what? It bad comparison coming from Texas Tech that takes a lot of time off the shot clock to watch an NBA game that was moving pretty quickly. Anyways, you might not be at any of these games this year, Michael, but you can still be on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season, from game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Woo, Michael.
Yes.
I did kind of enjoy watching NBA games, and it was the two Texas teams that I don't follow or that I would root against. And then I was like, I want to watch a Mavs game. And then I realized I'm going to be out for a couple of days because they had their own COVID issues. And I was realizing this is what happens when you play in a bubble, when you protect everybody from getting it. So when you get out of the bubble, people get it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. Like when they were in the bubble for the playoffs and stuff
over the summer. Everybody's coming out of the bubble and starting their next season. And now it's like, well,
the virus is still out there.
Free game. Yeah. All right. With that, let's talk some baseball.
Oh, okay.
Left field. Well struck. Desloney picks it up on a bounce. He's racing for second. Throw. Out in second.
Time because all the tools are there.
Wow, this one launched deep left off the bat of Warren and into the bleachers. There he goes. And the pitch is driven high deep to right. Kerstad to the wall. Off the top of the fence. Here comes the big foul. Cameron Warren's going to motor home from first. Throw to third is late. And the Red Raiders have reclaimed the lead. Popped up. Trevor Boone.
Still, one of my favorite clips on that has to be Josh Young's home run where the fan celebrates before the play-by-play guy calls it a home run.
Yes.
It's fantastic.
I could hear, whoa, just screaming in the background. Yep.
Just before he calls it a home run. It's fantastic. Man, I miss going to games at Danlaw Field, Rip Griffin Park.
It was, I do too. I mean, I didn't go very often, but they've really built a great environment there.
And
it's just a really fun place to watch baseball.
Yeah. It's just going to be different this year, which is unfortunate because, especially on the weekends, Friday, Saturday, man, that place gets rocking. And I don't know what to expect because they haven't come out with a schedule yet or with, attendance stuff just yet, but I mean, we're a few weeks out from the start of the season. We know, I mean, we've got a couple games on the schedule. We'll talk about in early March. Historically, they've started the season middle of February. But yeah, man, the environment there, it's going to be a little different. But it's good to have baseball back. A lot of national college baseball attention turned to Lubbock. They've been getting a lot of preseason rankings in the top five, which shouldn't be surprising because this is a thing that Tim Tadlock does, is he's got his guys, his team stacked to continue to have this kind of attention and these expectations. So far, we've heard from the NCAA and from D1 baseball that the Red Raiders come out as number three in both of those preseason polls, which is
not too shabby.
No, not bad at all. I do remember at one point last year before the season was called, Texas Tech did peak at number one for a time.
That is correct. And with Texas Tech in these top 25 preseason rankings, number 9, Texas. Number 10, TCU. Number 14, West Virginia. 20, Oklahoma State. I may be missing someone else, but that's quite a few Big 12 teams up there. So,
did you say
another? Did I say who?
Baylor?
No, I missed Baylor.
Are they ranked?
I don't see them. Not on the NCAA baseball tweet.
Oh.
I don't believe they are currently ranked. So even, you know, it's preseason rankings. We know what that means. It doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot, but it could. And that could have a pretty strong Big 12 conference again this year.
Yeah. So I'm just going back and looking at the schedule, or not the schedule, but look at the the rankings and thinking about times you played some of these teams, like you played Florida three different games in Omaha. You had a series against Louisville, who's number 5 this year. Ole Miss, I think you played last year, or you will play this year. Mississippi State was one of your last games last season. Obviously, you played against Arkansas in Omaha, TCU in Texas, your conference. Scrolling down a little bit. Florida State, you played last year. East Carolina, you've hosted them in regionals, in super regionals here in town. So you're one of those teams now that, like, just up there. Like, this is who you are. This is old hat almost.
Sure. I mean, it's the expectation, and it's a place where we can't get too spoiled and too entitled, but it's a really nice place to be right now and enjoy it while we can. I think we were robbed of a really special season last year as Tech fans. And I know that we lost some guys, but there's so many more that stuck around, and there's some new guys that are really exciting based off what Keith and others have told me. I don't claim to know this for a fact, but I'm really excited about it this year. I was super excited about it last year, very disappointed, understood why it all went down the way it did, just because that's how it had to be at the time. But this year is going to be different.
Yeah. Speaking of, I do have a little bit of a scheduling update. We did see from Kendall Rogers that the Big 12 athletic directors approved a quote normal season structure for 2021, which would include 24 conference games as opposed to the 32 conference games, which we talked about on the podcast last week. So 24 conference games means you're playing your normal 8-team 3-game series schedule in conference play.
Gotcha.
Which also means you're probably going to have a fairly regular looking schedule this year. You're going to have teams traveling in the midweek to play a game or two, because last week we did hear that it had been approved that there would be a 56 game schedule. So, I mean, you got lots of games to pack in there at the beginning before your conference season starts. Did also see that the travel roster expanded to 30 players, which gives even more opportunity for depth. We talked about the rosters being expanded, allowing teams to retain some seniors. The Texas Tech seniors last year all elected to move on, with Brian Klein and John McMillan were the big names that we were trying to see if they were coming back. But yeah, with the travel roster, I can't speak those words tonight. Travel roster expanded to 30. You're going to get a couple more guys eligible to play on the weekends. That's always good. And then I mentioned a little earlier, you do have a couple of games on your schedule that we already know. Texas Tech will play in the Shriners Classic in Houston. This is from our man Keith at Dinger Derby. Friday, March 5th, they'll play Texas State. Saturday the 6th, they will play A&M. Boo. And then Sunday the 7th, they'll play Rice.
Pretty good. Pretty good test right there.
Yeah, pretty good baseball in that tournament there.
I'm hoping it's on a better streaming platform than Flow TV. But Flow TV may get maybe the one at Frisco that they play. But I mean, if it's streaming at all, we'll be fortunate. So hopefully it will be.
Yeah, I mean,
it'll be on Facebook Live like one of them was last year. Is that right?
Was that last year or the year before?
I swear there was one on Facebook Live, and it was someone basically holding a cell phone in the press box, and you could hear Jamie Lent in the background.
Not sure. Oh man, that's good.
Something like that.
So the Shriners Classic will feature 6 Texas teams: Rice, Sam Houston State, TCU, Texas A&M, Texas State, and Texas Tech. So you won't face Sam Houston State or TCU. Anyways, do you have any other baseball you want to talk about, Michael? I know you're a big baseball fan.
No, you know me. I'm just a wealth of baseball information. I'm just going to stop right here to keep the podcast short.
All right, man. Let's talk about some basketball.
Yeah.
Here comes Stevenson. Spins.
Crossover and the lob to Owens.
Now the shot clock is at 3. Mooney spins, fires. Oh, he got it to go. Edwards with a 3. Good. What a shot, Tyler Edwards. Already doubled into 3. Owens who puts it down. Already. Odiasi. Crowbars it in. Shot clock down to 5. Got the screen. Here's a 3. Good.
Colbert got the separation. Oh. Stepping up big time. Dagger. Over the dish. Odiasi. And one. He can tie it at the line.
That's it. There's a new member of the Final Four Club. And they hail from Lubbock, Texas.
So, obviously, those highlights remind me of the tournament. There was some news announced today or recently that the NCAA tournament will be played or is scheduled to be played in bubble style format, all up there in Indianapolis. And it will be basically a straight seeded tournament. So you won't have any regional biases playing in for better attendance. So you won't have like the Texas Tech teams like lobbying, hey, I want to go play in Tulsa. I want to go play in Dallas, as opposed to I want to go play in Anaheim, which they did play in Anaheim in the next round. But anyways, it'll be just straight 1 through 68, which, you know, I can kind of appreciate. You get just a more fairly seeded tournament that way.
I agree. I understand why they do it the first time, because it does make sense for the fans that want to go support the teams to, you know, try to see them a little bit closer to their home. But yeah, that's really the fairest way to do it. Just straight up 1 through 68, seed it and go. I wonder how they'll do the 4 play-ins. They always do those kind of weird.
Yeah.
I never really understood why they do them the way that they do, but oh well.
Yeah, it always feels like, okay, so to me, like a play-in team, like I would expect they're all playing for a 16 seed.
Agreed. I don't know why. Sometimes like, it's 7, sometimes it's 11, sometimes it's 14.
It's like if they have to play their way into the tournament, like that would mean that they didn't claim a spot. I know. Anyways, bracketologists smarter than I can explain that. But I did also see that they pushed back the start of it a little bit. So round one is going to start on Thursday night instead of Thursday morning. So you only get one work day of round one basketball, because those first 2 days, historically the lowest work production in the United States of any days in America, when the big dance is on, those first 2 days. But yeah, you'll get the beginning of round one Thursday night and then Friday.
I've seen a little bit of rumors kind of associated with this, maybe not rumors, but just more of a push from some personalities, particularly Fran Fraschilla, who's kind of calling for the conference tournaments to not happen this year. And I'm for that. I'm kind of for that any year.
I
don't understand. I mean, if you're at the point where it's very seldom that how a team plays in the conference tournament hurts them. It could help a team. It could help a team on the bubble, but a team like Tech, you know, the year they went to the championship, they didn't play good in the conference tournament.
They lose the second or third game.
Yeah. It was Virginia.
Early.
And what?
Yeah.
It was West Virginia won it or something. And I think they were on the bubble and they got in, or it was something like that. So I don't think it helps the teams that are already kind of at the top. And I, not that I want to just assume Tech's going to be there, but if you need the conference tournament to make the NCAA tourney, that's probably, you're probably a one and done anyway. So yeah, anyway, I wouldn't mind not having the Big 12 tournament this year. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I wouldn't mind it either. Cause the one example I was thinking of when it was Kansas, I believe it was Kansas and Texas Tech were tied for the Big 12 regular season title, and they ended up splitting it or however that was decided. And then Iowa State won the tournament. And you're like, what? I mean, it was Kansas. I don't know. It was weird. Like, cause Kansas State was good too. But a team that wasn't really in title contention for the Big 12 won the Big 12 tournament. Yep. It's not easy to do, because you got to play if you're not like the one or two seed, you got to play like 5 games in 4 days or 4 games in 5 days. It's tough. But yeah, it rarely means anything for the teams, except for like, I'm always worried about like as Texas Tech losing in the tournament, not winning it, that you're gonna get kind of like they'll blow to your confidence. But then I realize like your first game is usually against a team you should handle pretty easily. Like when it's a team that's easier than probably any of your conference opponents, outside of maybe this year where the conference is so divided out into like very clear tiers. So you can re-grab that momentum in that first round. But I'm usually not a big fan of playing the tournament. I think because Texas Tech hasn't done well historically. So I'm on board. Let's get rid of the tournaments.
Yeah. Sure, I'm fine with it. It's never anything that I'm looking forward to the Big 12 tournament.
We mentioned at the top of the show, one thing I was looking forward to was playing a couple of games at the bottom of the conference. After the week you had in Austin and then home versus Baylor playing, you know, teams in the top. I mean, obviously Baylor's one. Texas could be 2, 3, or 4, depending how you look at them. And then you look at your schedule this weekend or this week, you got TCU and Iowa State. You're like, oh, good. We get to go 2-0 this week. I'm being a little facetious and tongue in cheek here because you have to play the games, but neither program had been doing really well. You were looking forward to a little bit of an ease up in your schedule because they're not Baylor, they're not Texas, they're not Kansas or West Virginia. But like I said, both of those games get canceled today, Tuesday afternoon, within a couple of hours of each other, with both programs struggling with COVID on their team. So you're off. You're off until Monday, I believe. Yeah.
Yep.
Possibly.
Monday in Morgantown, as far as we know. But that means we can talk a little bit about the last couple games that you mentioned briefly that were pretty...
They were good games, man.
Pretty hard. And you know, we mentioned last week, we felt that 1-1 was probably about best case scenario, but man, after Tech won that first one, I sure wanted them both. I wanted them both so bad.
So we were like, man, I would take 1-1. And we got 1-1, but we got the flip 1-1 than what we were expecting, with the win in Austin with that, 80-77 victory.
Dang right, it's 80-77. There's no 79-77 on this podcast.
No,
that was a 3. That was such garbage. I could completely see that somehow backfiring on Tech after Jones had just made a massive one the game before, and I just thought, and he's been on fire the whole game. He was like 4 for 6 from 3 or something on the night. So
not only did they take a point away,
so worried.
Yeah. So they took a point away from Texas Tech. They gave Texas more time.
Yeah. 0.8 seconds. I'm still it's living fine. About it's all that. Fine. Most stuff I can let go, but that was just so egregious to me. How could you take that away from McClung? I didn't see enough evidence from the video that I saw that his toes were ever over the line or on it or anyway, what a shot. Great shot by Mac McClung.
Mac McClung hits the game winner with fewer than 3 seconds, under 3 seconds to go. Was a 3. Texas had just missed like a pretty short layup. Texas Tech recovers the rebound, gets the ball to McClung. He takes it up court, 12 seconds or so, crosses half court, kind of moves over towards Chris Beard. Even the broadcast guys were like, okay, they're going to take a timeout here. And Chris Beard just kind of got down in his squat where his ready position. And you're like, oh no, he's going to let him play it out.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it looked like he kind of gave like McClung like a wave, like just go, man. And he got his man moving backwards and got him off balance just enough to put his foot in the ground, and on the court, however you want to make that connection back from football, and then puts up a game winning three. The beginning of that game, first half, was scary. It was not looking good for Texas Tech. Texas's size and aggression, and the fact that they could not miss from three. They were shooting something like 80% from three in the first half. You're like, oh my gosh, if this continues, we're toast. And it didn't.
Yeah. You were thinking, okay, surely this won't continue. The thing I was really worried about too was Texas's size. And you know, that was rough on Tech the first half as well. I know at one point, I think Texas had 15 rebounds to Tech 7, but they ended up pretty close. I think it was 40 to 36 or something like that in favor of UT when it was all said and done. Tech just kind of came back a little bit and UT came down a little. I mean, you are totally right. I mean, Ramey was 4 for 8 from three, but I think he was 4 for 5 at one point. Jones was 4 for 6, like I'd mentioned. They were just really shooting well that first half, and
their guards could not miss.
No, and it just was not. It was not looking good.
What did help though was Greg Brown. He stayed off of the scoring stat line for quite a while, or at least he was. He was held in check for a while. He did hit a three there towards the end of the game. You're like, don't heat up, man. Cause that ended up happening in the Baylor game with Jared Butler, who didn't score any points until 5 minutes to go and then dropped like 12 or whatever points in a couple minutes.
Yeah. He did kind of a Keenan Evans thing. Just not that Keenan Evans would not, he wouldn't shoot that much, but I think Butler was 0-for-9 before he made a shot.
Yeah, it was something ridiculous.
It just took over the last 5 minutes, and it was just, okay, well, yeah, he is good. He's very good. Tech held him for 35 minutes. They did the best they could.
So the game in Austin, it really was a tale of two halves. I mean, you were down, I believe, 10 at half, and then you came back, and it felt like you weren't making any progress on that deficit. Like you'd go on this mini run. And I made a comment in the Slack chat that you'd get the lead down to 7 or 5 points. And then Texas would hit a three. And it just felt like you just kind of had to reset and do it all over again. Texas would hit a three. You're like, miss a three. Dang it. Like stop. But obviously there you were able to slow them down offensively, and it was like late to finally pull with you pulled even with a couple minutes left, and then you were going back and forth in the lead. So like I said, yeah, you held them, you had them miss their last good look at a shot with like 10, 12 seconds left on the game clock. But Baylor, man, same kind of thing. Like they got a good lead on you. You were able to fight back a little bit. You took the lead there late in the second half. But it felt like very similar. Like as much as you were fighting to get that lead or to keep it close, like it would feel like Baylor would snap their fingers and like, oh, there's a 5-point lead. There's a 7-point lead for Baylor.
Like, yes.
It just happened so quickly. They're as good as the Texas guards were at shooting. Baylor's guards were just as good. They scored 68 points on you. It just felt like they could score whenever they needed to. You were able to hold Butler for 35 minutes. And I think that's what kept you in the game. Cause I think if he had gone off for 20 points in the game, I mean, you would have been down much larger earlier. You got them in like this weird position where like they didn't score for like 3 or 4 minutes, which really helped you get back in the game. Baylor Twitter was aflame with the officials in Lubbock saying that like things weren't being called
home
evenly.
Cooking.
Yeah. They were blaming the home cooking.
Hang on. Let me talk about that for a second, because I mentioned in the Slack chat, I absolutely love that there's this theory out there that Texas Tech has become such a force in basketball that we are able to have refs call games in our favor. So, I mean, I'm all for it. Put the rumor out there. As soon as the wheels touch down on Preston Smith, just put the rumor out there that you're already down by five. Because the Zebras are on our side, man.
They are 8-on-5 tonight.
You
know,
you come to Lubbock, better you better play all 8 of us, because we're coming. We're gonna take you down. Yeah, that's just such nonsense, but I love it.
And
you know what? The first half, Tech was terrible in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
18 points, 3 for 30. From shooting. Nope. Sorry. That's not right. 8 for 30. That's 27%. 2 for 12 from 3, 17%. No bench points. That includes Terrence Shannon Jr. That includes Tyreek Smith. Only 10 points in the paint. Actually, all 10 points were in the paint of 18. No free throws. That's the big one. They were settling so much for shots, outside shots. That's a credit to Baylor's defense, which Tech was not able to do anything they wanted to do.
They took the no middle defense from Mark Adams and like cranked it to 11.
Speaking of 11, that's how many turnovers Tech had in the first half. Yeah.
I mean, it was insane. Like it was well coordinated too. Cause you see when Texas Tech overcommits on a player driving, that teams are able to find, you know, another player out for three. The way Baylor was collapsing, like you'd get the ball out on the wing and they would collapse. The only open person would be all the way across the court. So it's like they were taking away you being able to drive on them.
Yes.
They were double teaming, but the player they were leaving open, you could not pass to him. It was smart. It was intense. I was like, holy crap, this is suffocating. Like I would be so frustrated to play against this kind of defense, which is a credit to Drew and his staff. Cause dang, that defense, like I had not watched a Baylor game in a couple of years, obviously when I said they hadn't lost in 3 years, whatever it was. And they lost to Kansas, whatever it was. Anyways, that defense, ooh, it's tough, man.
Yeah, I mean, Edwards hit a three with like 19 minutes left in the first half, and then Tech didn't score again until 11 minutes.
Yeah, they went like an 8-minute scoring drive. You're like, holy crap. Because it was just...
And luckily, because Tech can play defense.
Yeah, you were able to stay
Baylor
in the game.
Baylor only scored 11 points. It was just a small little 11-0 run in that stretch. But gosh, it was some ugly basketball. That's what Baylor does to you. You know, we got to see what some of these teams facing Tech feel and turned up a little bit, like to 11, like you said, it's somehow even more intense. I think the players, I don't know if they're slightly more athletic or maybe they're just longer or something, but there's a different intensity into how they were playing defense. And we're used to seeing good defensive teams play. And this was a great game by Peavy. You know, he started out, there was some scuttlebutt in the Slack chat of, I'm not going to name names. I'm just going to say it wasn't me. Just asking why Peavy was out there. But although he did foul out, I mean, he had a really solid game. It doesn't show up much on the stat sheet, but he had 5 boards, 3 for 5 shooting, 6 points in 21 minutes. But I mean, he made some really good plays, some key rebounds, some blocked shots here and there, or at least altered some shots. So I like seeing PV out there. I think that he's got a lot to offer, and I hope he continues to see quite a bit of playing time. But just, you know, these last two games, it was McClung and maybe somebody else. that was pretty much it. McClung had, what do you have, 22 against Texas, and then he had 24 against Baylor. But
it felt like it was just him, though.
Yeah. It was a little bit, you know what, McCullough had 16 at Texas, and Santos Silva had 12, and Shannon had 14. So at least with Texas, he had a little bit of help. But, you know, those last two games, I think it just really got to where it was him and McCullough and some other people, maybe, hopefully.
Yeah, and then on short turnaround, Baylor took on Kansas Monday night and did the exact same thing to them. Yes. They got up 13 at the half, ended up winning that game by 8, 77-69. So Baylor, number two in the country, 13-0. You felt like you had a shot at them, but it collapsed on you once Butler started hitting shots.
That was it.
It was weird how like those two things aligned. Cause like you were fighting to keep up with them, and you were doing a good job. And then it felt like Butler hit his first shot. Like it was a three, wasn't it? He hits his first shot.
I think so. Yes.
And it just deflated Texas Tech. And then it just got away from him. But I mean, it happens when you play number two team in the country. Props to Baylor. Texas Tech does end up moving up in the polls after going 1-1 on the week. And the AP poll rose to number 12. They are the highest ranked four-loss team in the country, which should tell you a little bit about the respect Texas Tech and Chris Beard is able to garner, looking at a four-loss team still being a top 15. Also, interesting note, a handful of blue bloods, all unranked. And it's the first time it's happened in, you said, almost 60 years, Michael.
Yeah. It was December 1961 was the last time that UNC, Duke, and Kentucky were all left out of the top 25. Mm. Crazy.
Yeah.
But guess who's there?
Texas Tech, baby. That's all that matters. Ken Palm has Texas Tech at 14, so they dropped one spot. Hazelmetrics moved Tech up one spot to 11. BPI dropped Tech one spot to 7. And the net rankings actually have Tech moved up a handful of spots, number 14. So
yep, I think they like update. What they saw this week. I think everybody's getting the benefit of the doubt against Baylor because Baylor is that good. That helps. That helps Tech's case a little bit. It's a quality loss, if you will.
Yeah. And then giving up 77 points to Texas on the road, 68 to Baylor. Your defense actually improved in the rankings. They moved up to number 3 again. And KenPom, your adjusted offense is at 34. And if you're looking ahead to West Virginia, so right now the next game on your schedule on what would be Monday, KenPom has them at 18. Their offense is obviously a little bit better than yours at 18th, and their defense is at 23rd. So they're a pretty solid top 25 team. Bob Huggins always has his guys that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a great matchup. That the other number 14 or four loss team, you know, close to Tech in the top 25 is West Virginia. They're only two spots behind at 14 with a 9-4 record. You know, the main guys, of course, Miles McBride, I think just a sophomore. He's averaging 15 points a game. Derek Culver's still there, averaging 14 a game. Taj Sherman averaging 12, Sean McNeil averaging 10. I mean, they've got some contributors that are, you know, really putting in some work, and Taj Sherman comes off the bench. So just kind of an interesting strategy there. But what I wanted to mention too is just their four losses. One was against Gonzaga, 82-87. And Gonzaga is still ranked number one in the country, even above Baylor, which I'm not so sure about that. Let's see, loss number two was to Kansas in Lawrence, 65-79. This is the worst of their four losses. Loss three was in Norman versus OU, 71-75. Tech barely got out alive against OU, so that's understandable. And then their other loss was at home versus Texas, 70-72. So some close losses, a team very, at least with a similar record to Texas Tech. I mean, they won a close one in Stillwater against Oklahoma State by three. Actually got a pretty close one against Iowa State at home, 70-65. Pretty similar in record and possibly even some coaching similarities, but it's, I don't want to get too far into that because I know there's a lot of people that have strong opinions on Huggins and I'm going to be careful to compare him to Beard too much, but just
don't do it to my man.
Yeah. I'm not just a tough team. It's going to be a really good game. I'm even more excited about it now because we unfortunately got deprived of two games and now we've got to wait almost a full week for another game. But Monday night, everything going well, tune into ESPN at 8 p.m. It's the big Monday game.
Yeah, man.
The Sonic, whatever it is or whatever they call it. So ESPN Monday night, 8 p.m. Let's see if Tech can pick right back up where they left off in Austin, at least.
So one of the big storylines, I guess, here at this past couple of weeks for West Virginia was Oscar Tshiebwe electing to sit out for personal reasons. Mm. So that was almost 3 weeks ago. And then a week ago, announced he's transferring to Kentucky. It's like, you're not really sitting out for personal reasons. You're just transferring. Let's just get that straight. But I mean, he played in 10 games this year, averaging 20 minutes a game, shooting greater than 50% from the field, 8 rebounds a game, 9 points a game. There's a headline on one of these articles that West Virginia is still searching for their identity without Tshiebwe. So if you remember, he's one of those guys with some pretty good size that always gives you trouble. Listed at 6'9", 260. So it's like a Odiasse size body down there that's been giving you trouble. But West Virginia is without him. Yeah, no, he's packed his bags to Lexington. And boy, do the Wildcats need help. They are like 4-8 this year.
Kentucky is really struggling. I am really losing sleep over this. I'm sure you are too.
Well, see, Samantha is because she's a Kentucky basketball fan.
So we
watch some Kentucky basketball every now and then.
Well, my wife's from, well, not from, but a little town close to Louisville. So she grew up Louisville Cardinal fans and definitely not UK fans. UK to her is basically like UT to us.
Yeah, well, that's all right. I don't count them as my team. It's a team to root for.
She doesn't even like the blue.
I don't mind the blue. but man, yeah, they're 4-8. That's what they are. They're 3-2 in conference somehow. Probably because SEC outside of Kentucky is not usually pretty good. Anyways,
yeah, definitely. If we're ready, are you about ready to do some to talk a little bit of football or?
Yeah, man, I'm just about ready for some football.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Well, okay. Well, before that,
we had some playoffs this weekend.
Playoffs. Yeah, that's right. I want you to remember that the wait is finally over. Football is in full effect, and the NBA is back, baby. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season, from game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props. Bet Online gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to Bet Online today. Use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
So you remember when I was talking about the Mavericks not playing for a while? Mm-hmm. It's not true. They played yesterday, got blown up by the Raptors. They played Sunday, they lost to the Bulls. They played Friday, lost to the Bucks. They did beat the Hornets last Wednesday. Yeah.
Huge Mavs fan over there.
Luka Magic. They play tomorrow night against the Pacers. Friday night, though, against your Spurs.
I know. Hopefully that one's going to be televised somewhere other than Fox Sports something. We'll see.
I was about to say, that sounds like a Fox Sports Southwest.
Yeah. It does. It's like a key. We're going to broadcast it on Fox Sports Dallas and San Antonio.
Yeah, because it's not like a TNT game or TBS, whatever they play their season games on. All right, man.
Should be.
Let's do some football.
Yes.
They go four up top. They throw the fade to Fasher. Caught. Touchdown.
With time. Delivered.
Picked off. DeMarcus Fields. Down the sideline. Touchdown. Red Raiders. 97 yards.
Harrell back to throw. Going deep down the sideline for Robert Johnson.
And oh, my.
You got it. Touchdown. Oh. Red Raiders. Robert Johnson. Touchdown. Red Raiders.
Take a shot to the end zone.
All day to throw. Over the top, Jakeem Grant. Touchdown, Texas Tech.
Second down now. Deep strike. Got the big man. Country. Pulls free. And touchdown. Red Raiders with a second to go.
Let the scoring begin.
Our man. PFF, Pro Football something. Gosh, I should have had this ready to go. They released their postseason grades by positions. Texas Tech, man, does not look good. They do it player grades. They look at player performance grading scale that tops out at 100. And quickly, we'll just go through the scores. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm not really ready.
Okay. Starting from the offensive line. Center, C+. Guard, D+. Tackle, F.
Mm.
Running back. I think this is harsh. C-.
I couldn't agree more. I think our running backs were the best position group we had all season.
Well, so I immediately are thinking maybe not, because I don't think this is comparing the position group to the team. Like our running backs are the best team, are the best position group. They are the highest graded unit outside of center, which was one player. on the offense. But it, like, if you look at across the country, across the conference, even, I wouldn't say that Texas Tech is has the best running backs. But C minus, I felt was a little harsh.
I agree.
Tight end, F minus. I didn't know there's a minus involved with F, but there it is. Wide receiver, D. That also feels a little harsh. But it's like, I mean, outside of Ezukanma and Price.
Well, and Seth, if you guys want to read Seth's breakdown at Stake in the Plains, please go check that out of these grades. He mentions the fact that all the receivers are lumped together. Because, you know, the inside and outside guys are lumped together. So, yeah, aside from Ezukama, the wide receivers didn't do a whole lot. But inside receivers really didn't do a whole lot either, aside from Keyshawn Carter.
And he didn't play
the last few games.
Yeah, I was saying, he's no longer here.
Yeah.
Quarterback, D.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. Just waiting for Maverick McIver, man. He's on campus. Woohoo.
Gosh. Is he starting? Has Wells announced him as starter yet? It's just a matter of time, right?
I mean, if he hasn't, what the hell is he doing?
what are Sonny we trying Cumbie, to save?
Knock down his door, man, and be like, no, announce him today. Yeah, I don't know, man. I am interested to start hearing about spring football. I know it's way too soon for spring football. I get that.
It's way too soon.
And it's probably because I want to see now what's the direction Sonny Cumbie is trying to take the offense. And I get that, like, in a spring game, if it's televised, whatever, you're going to get the most watered down vanilla version of an offense you could ever get. I still want to see it.
Yeah, I want to see it too. Sure.
Quickly, because I heard somebody else do this and I want to take their content idea. How would you kind of put together like a top three or top five Texas Tech wide receivers of all time?
Of all time?
Yeah. Just quickly. Off the top of your head.
Well, I mean, Crabtree.
Crabtree's one.
Would be one.
Would you go Welker too?
Well, he wasn't a wide receiver though, was he?
Well, okay.
Talking receivers.
Let's do all receivers.
Man, this is okay. All time. Cause I know people that were like prior to 2000 are going to be upset, but I can't help but think of Joel Filani. I can't help but think of
my guys will be from 2007 on. Cause I don't know enough about anybody pre 2007 to say
was it Jarrett Hicks? I think Jarrett Hicks was really good. Is that right? I'm making one up. Eric Ward.
This was bad.
I really liked Eric Ward. Yeah, this was.
I shouldn't have thrown this on you real last second. Maybe we'll revisit this later. But yeah, I'm interested to think. Once you get past Crabtree, where are you going? Like, I don't know.
Well, that's worth considering with a little bit more time, but I would really, just because of the hands, he may not have the stats, but it would be hard for me not to include Eric Ward up there.
I think he had
pretty
good stats too. Okay.
I think he did. He had both. Jason Merrow, does he count?
He just didn't have the yards that Crabtree had, but it's difficult because Crabtree, like, he caught a bunch of passes. He was a main target when he was on the offense. Or on the field, and he was able to break so many tackles.
Well, I think Eric Ward's deal too was a lot of the passes they were throwing to him, they were just like jump balls.
They were contested.
He basically had to come down with it and just land and catch it. You know, he wasn't running routes as much that like Crabtree, where he was able to catch on the run.
So let's revisit this.
Maybe okay, next week. That's a good thought.
and not be like, hey, let's hear your top five receivers of all time go.
thank you.
and maybe we'll work through some other position groups too. Quarterback, Patrick Mahomes. He'd have to be up there, right? Top five?
You would think so. Zebby Lethridge.
Our man Patrick, though, he went down this weekend.
He did.
AFC division game. And it was...
I was watching live when that happened.
So was I. I was at a birthday party for one of my wife's good friends had a little girl that turned one, but the guys had the football game on. We were watching it, and it the hit looked so like innocuous, right? It was like so...
Yeah.
Every day, like the quarterback just went down. Yeah, he went head first into the turf. I get that. Like he still hit his head on the turf. It didn't seem like
the defender kind of pulled him a little bit. Not like it didn't look anything nefarious. It didn't to me. It just looked like a football play, and the defender was just grasping for whatever he could get to bring him down, you know.
But then you see Patrick Mahomes not be able to stand up afterwards. Like, holy crap, was he like, he was gone.
My heart skipped a beat. it was like that sinking feeling, just like you have that dream where you forgot your homework or you forgot to study for a test or something. Just that. Yeah, that was rough.
So, excuse me, watching the replay, I had a thought, and I posted this on a little short thread on Twitter. The defender's arm got up under Mahomes's helmet, like, and it looked like it was kind of pinned or pinched against his neck. And that kind of pressure held there for long enough, much longer than the arm was there during the game, could cause somebody to lose consciousness. I've seen somebody like along those lines say when a player, when somebody has an elevated heart rate, like you would get with an athlete competing in a sport, that even a momentary disruption in blood flow could render somebody unconscious much faster than you would expect. So watching, I was like, I don't think it was there long enough that he was choked out, and not that he was without air, but he was without blood flow enough that he lost consciousness. But I think the combination of the two, that maybe he had enough change in blood flow that it exasperated his head injury when he hit the turf. So the two, if they were independent of each other, wouldn't have done anything. But the two together, you got what you saw on Sunday. Like, man, was he like just out of it. Good news is that while he is going through the concussion protocol, it does seem like he is progressing through it. He is making milestones, like he's hitting big milestones in terms of recovering and being able to play again, which kind of helps me think like maybe it was a combination of those two things. It wasn't purely a concussion. And obviously he wasn't choked out. I don't think there was enough pressure long enough on his throat to do that. But status currently unknown. I know the Bills fans are saying, hey, you know, Patrick, it's okay. We want you to be healthy. Why don't you go ahead and sit this one out, man?
Yeah, why don't you just wait, buddy? Yeah.
But okay, the Bills in the AFC Championship game, like what universe?
What is it? It's 1992?
Like, what are we living in, man? I have
this,
never...
30 years ago?
I have never in my football memory known the Bills to be good. Same with the Bengals. Same with the Browns. They've always been bad.
But not this year. I vaguely remember the Bills because I was in first, second, third grade when the Cowboys were good. And I remember they played the Bills twice, I think. And one of the main reasons I remember that is because I grew up near Abilene, and there's a little town south of Abilene called Buffalo Gap. And I remember that they temporarily changed their name to Cowboy Gap.
That's funny.
Or something like that. It was either Cowboy Gap or Dallas Gap, or I don't remember, but I think it was Cowboy Gap. So they temporarily changed their name for one or both of those Super Bowls.
Yeah. Tom Brady in the NFC Championship game in his first season in the NFC. The Tampa Bay Gronkineers. Yeah, you like it? It's not mine.
I'd heard Tampa Bay. I hadn't heard Gronkaneers. That's pretty good. That's truly impressive. I did not think that was going to happen. I'm not completely surprised that they made the playoffs. I figured that he would somehow manhandle them to that point, but to make the NFC Championship, I did not see that coming. I do like that. I think I saw some graphic this week saying that it was comparing number of times that Tom Brady has appeared in the NFC Championship in the last 27 years versus the number of times the Cowboys have.
And it's even, right? At one?
It's less than, I think it was 1-0 or something. And I can't remember why the cutoff. Maybe it was just since he's been in the league. So 27 that's too long. Anyway, it was something crazy. But super impressive, incredible. Didn't really see that coming. And I'm really looking forward to the Rodgers-Brady matchup. And this reminds me, years ago, a couple of my buds and I started we were hoping it would be a tradition of going to Vegas on championship week, because it's not the Super Bowl, because the Super Bowl is like impossible to go to Vegas. So it was cheaper and it was two games to watch instead of one. So it was two big games to watch instead of just one. So we did that and had just an absolute blast watching the AFC and NFC championship games that weekend we went. So we vowed to go back and we haven't. It's been like 6 or 7 years. So every time I think about that, like, oh man, I should totally be in Vegas with my buds.
With your boys.
Having too many bourbons and maybe dropping a few bills on how many rushing yards Colin Kaepernick's going to have in the first half. I remember running. I remember running to make a bet once.
Wow.
And I won. I cashed out on it because I forgot what it was. It was, they had set the line like something crazy. Cause it was Niners, Seahawks that year. And I think they had set the line at Cap will have like 15 rushing yards in the first half. And I was like,
over.
Yeah, over. I forgot what the line was. And I ran and I got that bet in time. And he, I think he got it on one play, maybe his first or second cha-ching rushing play. I was like, yeah, there you go.
Let's go cash out. So yeah,
I felt so knowledgeable.
AFC title game this weekend, Tampa Bay, Green Bay. The yards of that.
Battle
of the Bays. Bay of Pigs? No. NFC. Sorry. That was the NFC. NFC, Tampa Bay, Green Bay. AFC, 15-3 Buffalo. 15. Yeah. What the hell?
I mean, there's been like three seasons in a row where they haven't won 15 games combined.
Yeah. And then 15-2 Kansas City. I remember one of those losses was like week 17 or whatever, where they played nobody. Like everybody was like taking the week off.
Yes. Yeah. But because the only team that beat them this year with Mahomes was the Raiders somehow.
Yeah.
Somehow Gruden did it.
So could be it will be a good weekend of NFL playoffs. Say that.
Agreed. Even though I have no idea who's on the Bills aside from Josh somebody.
Except for Josh Allen, who can throw it almost as far as Mahomes can.
The mountains.
That was about the only good thing not the only good thing. One of the like the biggest selling points when he was coming out of Wyoming. Wyoming quarterback? Yeah, but he can throw it a mile.
Oh, okay, well, because dude, the air's thin in Wyoming, dude. That's why.
Hear me out, dude.
Got the wind behind him in Lubbock.
A little TikTok reference went right over your head. It's okay. All right. Yeah. We do have questions. Let's get to those tonight.
Okay.
Maybe if I can work this thing properly. Good producing skills.
Now, are these really the questions that I was called here to answer?
Who's in the box? Oh, what's in the box?
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Damn it! Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter?
You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
All right. So one, I had a really bad typo in the first call for questions. Like, man, it's been a day. But apparently this afternoon, I haven't followed up with it, so I can't tell you for sure. There was a stretch limousine pulled up to the I heard it both ways. The Fort Worth law office of Joe Exotic, Tiger King's lawyer, or out front of the prison he's at expecting his presidential pardon. So I kind of teased that out there to kind of prime some of the questions we got. First one, though, unrelated to all that, Peter Puente asked what McClung's field goal percentage is. Our man Mac is shooting greater than 43% from the field.
Yes.
So it says he scores a lot, but misses a ton of shots. And is this good for the team overall? You know what? Like,
if you're shooting over 40%, you're really doing all right.
He's scoring.
I mean more than better than all right. 40 is like kind of the bar of pretty great. So even below 40, you might could argue, but man, yeah, at 43%, 33% from three, you know, 82% from the free throw line. Yeah, he's really shooting pretty well.
He's averaging as most points as he's done in college. His first year was 13. Last year was 15.7. Currently he's hitting 16.3. And at that percentage, like, I wouldn't mind if they went to him more.
Sure.
Offensively, like, I don't like seeing Shannon try threes. I don't like PV taking anything outside of the circle, like outside of the restricted area. It feels like if Marcos Santos Silva doesn't have the ball in the lane, that like he shouldn't have the ball. So anyways, I at that percentage, at 43%, I say give him more shots.
Yeah, and in the last five games, I'll just read off his percentages real quick, because in the last five games, he's averaged 20.2 points. Like Spencer said, he's averaging about 16 for the year, but the last five, he's averaged 20. And in those five games, he has shot from the field, let me see, 44%, 43%, 80%, 55, 47. So he's really in a good spot right now.
The game against Texas was his lowest at 43%.
Yeah, he's really doing well. You know, he's had some rough nights here and there, obviously, but these last five games, this five game stretch has he's probably almost single handedly kept Tech in the game a few times.
Yeah, and I think you said it, but yeah, of the five games, he scored 20 points three times. He's averaging 20 points over those games. Include like these yes. are games: Baylor, Texas, Oklahoma State are the big ones, where he went over 20 points. Didn't over Iowa State or Kansas State, but he shot 80% against Iowa State, 55% versus Kansas State. So like he could have scored more points. He only played 27 minutes against Kansas State.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Peter, you're totally right. He's shooting a lot. He's shooting quite a bit, but the percentages are working out. He seems, I would take those. I would take those numbers.
Sure.
But you're totally right. He is shooting a lot. So maybe the misses seem to feel like it's more than there are.
And then longtime listeners will remember this man, Hunter Cook. Hunter's been on the podcast several times, and he and Kyle were the catalyst for me wanting to start a podcast, because it was their podcast I was listening to. I was like, man, like it was inspiring to me to get off my butt and try it. So anyways, always enjoyed their stuff. Hunter asks, if the Tiger King can get a pardon, is Tommy Tuberville's wife next? No.
You may have to explain what this reference means in case some people don't know.
Tommy Tuberville obviously was the head coach here at Texas Tech in December of 2012. So he was like on their way out, basically. And maybe it was when they, you know, she came to pick him up from the 50 yard line, when he was jumping out the window, speeding off. No, that's terrible.
That is terrible.
Tommy Tuberville's wife, Suzanne Tuberville, ran a red light, on slide, basically in front of the mall, and struck a vehicle. One of the passengers in that vehicle was severely injured and ended up passing away from his injuries. There weren't any criminal charges pulled up or pressed against Mrs. Tuberville. It all seemed to go hush hush quietly. It just seemed to disappear. It looked like it was just more of like insurance was going to cover everything, and there wasn't any kind of civil case brought against the Tubervilles from the family of this man who ended up passing away. So, unfortunately, Hunter, to be pardoned, you actually have to be convicted. And she wasn't ever convicted.
Yeah, everything's charged. Fine.
So,
have to save the pardon for someone else.
Yeah. I think that's it. Michael, you want to get into what we learned?
Yes, I am ready.
So I'm looking forward to hearing this.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either.
All right, so what did we learn, Michael?
I learned a very weird pizza cooling technique. Why? But before I go into that,
hold on.
Why do
you need to cool pizza?
Okay, this is not a technique I endorse. I just learned of its existence.
I just clicked on the link and the headline it's blowing my mind right now. Hold on.
I was totally waiting to do all this live because what? It's as gross as it sounds. There's a post on Reddit that's went viral this week titled, "My husband believes running pizza underwater to cool it down is acceptable." I'm going to go ahead and read the post. It's really short. And then she goes on to say, pretty much what the title says, not my opinion, but my husband's. In college, my husband and I would make oven pizzas, and he would run his slices under the water fountain to cool it down faster. He says it didn't change the taste and was still good. She later adds an edit saying, I've gotten a lot of accusations that this is fake/karma whoring. I don't even know what that is.
There's a, sorry.
My brother that lives with us took a video on Snapchat at dinner tonight. So you may all feast your eyes on water pizza. There's a video
of is a video of this man. I'm pulling it up. Water pizza.
Just standing over a sink with the faucet running. Just
what?
And it's like some cheap Red Baron. I mean, I'm not knocking Red Baron because we buy it and I like it, but it's like one of those cheap thin crust pizzas. And he's just.
But you can't wait
under the water and taking a bite.
You can't wait 10 seconds for it to cool off. You got to like take it off, like out of the oven and go stick it under the faucet. Like I don't, in what universe is the pizza too hot to eat that you can't wait a couple of seconds for it to cool off?
Any universe, dude, I have burned my mouth. I've burned the roof of my mouth so many times because I was way too impatient to wait for pizza to cool. I've gotten older through my years and my days of trial and error, burning my mouth. So I do wait now. But back in the day in college, it was like, that pizza's ready. I'm going to pull it out, immediately slice it, put it on my plate. Oh, crap, that hurts.
Okay.
That was just wash, rinse, repeat, no pun included. Just did that over and over and over. Running water, I am not endorsing this. This sounds like a terrible idea. There was an article on Popular Mechanics even trying to determine whether or not it...
Okay, so
even helps.
I have not listened to the audio of this video. I'm gonna play it right now. It's 9 seconds.
I don't know if there is audio. Okay, go for it though.
Let's try it. No audio.
Oh, wait, yeah, there is. Yeah, there is. You gotta click on the top and on the right. I can hear it now.
Because I got the computer muted. Don't be stupid.
Hop, Brennan.
That is my unpopular opinion.
I already got 2 comments. Someone said that would 100% make...
Hot, Brennan.
I don't get it, man. He's just... Like, he's legit standing at the sink like he's just eating... Like, I don't get it, man. That's so gross.
I can even vibe with standing over the sink and eating because for some reason I've catched myself doing that, and that's, I'm sure, a terrible habit.
At least
I'm not running it under water first.
Natural place for the crumbs to fall, and like you just, that's an easy cleanup. But like,
see, you get it.
Yeah, I want to go and read this Popular Mechanics article now. Internet villain runs hot pizza underwater to cool it down. Science or insanity? Obviously, insanity. I don't I mean, I get that, like, it doesn't have time to get soggy when you just, like, basically pass it under the water and then immediately take a bite. Water doesn't have taste.
But that's also what ranch is for.
This is like Diet Ranch, man. It's just water.
Gross. Gosh, it's just so gross.
I don't get it. I like, again, like, I don't get that, like, you have to eat it so immediately that you can't wait for it to cool down.
Agree. Now, I mean, the 23-year-old me didn't believe that, but I believe it. I believe it now. I've learned the hard way.
I am so, like, I'm glad you waited, because I'm, I don't even know what to say, man.
So yeah, that's what I learned, is that some people have some interesting pizza cooling techniques.
Yeah, man. Well, that'll do it for us on the 23 Personal Podcast. I'm Spencer. That's Michael. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast and sharing our fandom for the Texas Tech Red Raiders. You can connect with us on Twitter at 23 Personnel, Spencer at Puntsuck, and Michael at Michael_LBK, and find even more great content over on stakingtheplains.com. Help us out by rating the show and leaving a review on iTunes, and subscribe on whatever channel you listen to podcasts. Remember to tell your friends about the show. The guys will be back next week with another episode. And until then, guns up and let the tortillas fly.